Taser Update for August 26th, 2018. I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Elogi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And it's Gamescom week, so announcements were aplenty. Some of them very interesting, some of them very confusing. And we'll be talking about, well, all of them. apart from the Fortnite stuff, which nobody really cares about, honestly. Though there was one little bit of Fortnite news that I actually did kind of want to mention. We didn't put it in the show notes, but I'll just mention it quickly. Epic is planning to do controller-based matchmaking. So if you're playing with a keyboard and mouse on the PS4, you will be matched with people who are also playing with a keyboard and mouse on the PS4 and PC, kind of getting around that whole Sony cross-network issue. So there's that. We'll see how that goes and whether Sony will end up putting the kibosh on that. Knowing Sony, you probably... we'll follow
that. I swear to God, Sony is that company that walks around like that robot with that sign that says, "No fun allowed."
Yeah, we'll see how their holiday sales end up this year. I think, I don't know. It seems to me like public perception of them is kind of turning at this point. So,
yeah,
we'll see how that goes. But anyway, we've been up to some stuff this week, so I think we'll just start off there. And I've been playing Shining Force CD, as I mentioned a little bit on Let's Weekend. In midway through Chapter 2, and I've already got characters that can be promoted, but I'm not going to do that yet. I'm not entirely sure how that happened, because you can promote a cat at level 10, but I'm only at the second chapter, so how the hell did I get there so quickly? Unless the scenarios are shorter than I expect, because I remember the first Shining Force was 8 chapters, so I'm kind of expecting that from this one, but who knows. Either way, it's a good game. I like it. We'll probably play more of it later tonight and get through and, boost my characters up to as close to 20 as I can before promoting and then keep going there. Apart from that, I got into Super Metroid again.
It happens.
It happens, and I'm playing it on the SNES Classic, as noted. Boy, does that game hold up. Mm-hmm. It's one of those 16-bit classics that it really hasn't aged.
No.
The control works. The art direction is still really nice. Gameplay is, it's Metroid. So,
there's a reason why, quote unquote, Metroidvania style games are so widespread.
Yeah, as a style, it's just fun.
Yeah.
And this is probably one of the better examples of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Still can't make Samus crawl, though.
No, but she can moonwalk. So,
yeah.
That's a thing. Anyways, so that's it for me. How about you, Pat?
Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo. I've pretty much spent the week focusing on that and sort of collaborating with some streamers that I know about a possible player development project there. So I'm pretty excited about that. Other than that, not much else.
Okay.
So, Brandon?
I am still playing Octopath. I have now officially finished half of the Chapter 4 installments for all of the characters.
How are you liking it?
Oh, it's good. It's good. Some of them end better than others, but all of them are pretty satisfying. I have finished Primroses. I have finished Ophelia's. Therian's, and I did Tressa's last night.
That's four.
Right? I figured out that once you have both your main character and Ulbric at around 54, level 54, the game kind of just beats itself.
Yeah, you could pretty much just walk through the rest of it at that point.
Yeah, if you get enough energizing pomegranates to build up his BP power, his skill point power, and then he's able to pull off his major attack that takes off 10,000 something hit points every time
that
he does
off
it.
Over 30K.
Yeah. It kind of beats itself at that point.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you would think, but some of chapter 4 bosses have such like high shield levels that
it you really can have to set it up.
Mm-hmm. Especially Red Eye, who's yeah, Red Eye has a bunch of attacks that can basically knock out your entire party, knock them completely unconscious for 2 turns. And it doesn't take much for Red Eye to completely annihilate your team in a very short amount of time. I've been told that the best way to circumvent this is to have an apothecary in your party that can cast, I think it's called Reinvigorate or something like that to help sort of hold off the status ailments, but...
That's real rough.
Yeah. And then, of course, he has his final evil eye attack, which is the petrification power that is alluded to many times in the story.
See, he didn't live to do that to me.
Yeah. See, if he does it to you, and he'll only do it to, like, one character at a time, but you have to, like, very quickly get the Herb of Grace, I think is what it's called, that cures that, like, almost instantly, because if you don't, and he manages to actually kill that character, you cannot revive them. So, yeah.
As is alluded to in the story.
Yeah. And then Cyrus's, and Cyrus is bosses Lucia, and Lucia has, like, a 32 shield rate. Paired with these like really powerful magic attacks, so
yeah, you have to tee off to get a shield break.
Mm-hmm. It yeah, it's so, you know, it's takes time. All four of the major, I mean, like literally all the chapter 4 bosses are like that though. They've got that one thing that will. If you're not careful, it will slowly just, it will do, it it just, it's almost unfair at times. I tried Alphen's chapter 4 boss, and that thing has a what's called a toxic rainbow spell that basically, like, decreases the total hit points of everyone in the party every turn. So, and it cannot be cured. So, yeah. And then, of course, after you do that, then there's the Chapter 5, which is the true ending, and from what I'm told, that is a hell of a fight. Also because it's a two-parter.
Yeah.
But other than that, I've been playing Death's Gambit. I still intend to review it. In fact, I think I'm at a point now where I can start writing my review and putting it up sometime this week. It is, as I've said in the past, a 2D Dark Souls clone, and it's probably the most Dark Souls of 2D Dark Souls clone. Only, unlike Dark Souls, it has a really snide sense of humor about itself.
Hmm.
And also, it actually does some things that I think actually makes it, in some places, better than Dark Souls. Because even though you're going to die in this game, and die constantly, you do actually get something out of it in that, well, first of all, you don't completely have, like, your total health points halved. It doesn't, unlike Dark Souls, it doesn't do that, so that's good. But it also, every so often, when you die, you'll end up having a vision. Sometimes you'll have a vision of the afterlife, or sometimes you'll have a vision of your character's past, which then occasionally, you know, the Grim Reaper will invade for just whatever reason. Like, you're seeing your, like, older sister who's a soldier going off to battle, and then you walk back into your house, and then you see Death, and he's wearing an apron, and he's making breakfast. So, it's yeah, that kind of game.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, that's me. So, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so, I checked out a game that's on Game Pass right now called Bomber Crew, which is kind of World War II, FTL.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of managing this crew on a bomber, hence the name, during the, I think it says 1942, so when you get a chance to customize the ship, you can put, like, text on the side, so I put fuck Nazis on there.
Mm-hmm.
because that was in vogue at the time.
Yeah.
You had to build out your crew. You have people at turrets. And you especially have somebody that manages the bomb doors, complete with like a little kind of special camera view, so you can sort of try to be more precise with your bombings.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still kind of early in it, just getting got my first real mission done beyond the tutorial stuff, but it works pretty well. On a controller, could be a little bit better. Just trying to switch through, because it's not like FTL where you just have the mouse and just click on the guy you want to move and click where you want him to go, that sort of stuff.
Mm.
You kind of have to highlight them on a list, and that'll limit your controls to them. And then you can sort of control them. So it can be a little bit hectic at times when you're trying to switch to the right people. Mm. But other than that, it's pretty cool, and that game is on everything, I believe. PC, Switch, PS4, and Xbox One. I picked up Agents of Mayhem. I mentioned that last week, and finally got around to playing it. And it's pretty good. I definitely see the issues as far as how it is kind of like a co-op shooter. Like you have three characters with you at all times, but there's no co-op.
It would have been much better if they had put co-op in it.
Yeah,
I think it would have been a hell of a lot better.
But one of the cool things is it's set in South Korea, sort of in the near future, where there are kind of lots of like advanced tech kind of around the world. But it kind of feels like if they ever make an Overwatch game that isn't a multiplayer shooter, like this would kind of be sort of like that.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the cast is pretty diverse from what I've seen so far.
Chris, does it remind you of like a futuristic G.I. Joe cartoon? Because that's what it always reminded me of when I was playing.
I've never seen G.I. Joe. Never
you
cared for
son
it.
Son of a bitch. No, you don't, never saw the original cartoon in the 80s?
No, I was born in the 80s.
So was I.
Yeah, like the first shows I probably watched were like TMT, TMNT.
Oh, man, this is... You didn't play
stuff in the 80s.
No, same with me. 80s.
So nobody on this show has seen G.I. Joe, the cartoon.
Oh, I have.
I grew up on it.
Okay.
It was garbage, but
Yeah, frankly, dicks, you're not missing much.
Knowing is half the battle, you sons of bitches.
That's about all I know.
Seriously, compared to the comic book, cartoon is utter garbage.
The other half is laser beams. Knowing is half the battle, the other half is laser beams. Anyway, the only reason I brought that up is because that was actually one of the reasons I enjoyed the game, as flawed as it is, because it reminded me of playing like a G.I. Joe cartoon. And I really enjoyed it because of
that. I can see that. Hmm. It's like a more vulgar G.I. Joe.
Yeah, there's a vulgarity, but it's like the idea, like you have all these specialized teams and stuff, like this character does that and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. The action is pretty much fine. There's not a ton to it. There's Saints Row braining all over the place, the purpley symbol and all the purples all over the place. But I got the bundled edition with all the DLC, so I can eventually I'll have Gat in my crew. I think there's maybe one more character in there. For $6, you can get all the DLC on PS4 with it. $4 if you just want the base game.
It's not on sale on Xbox, is it?
I don't think so. I know it's definitely part of the big PSN sale that's going on right now that ends on Tuesday. And that was one of those, this is too fucking cheap not to grab it.
Hmm.
Especially since I've been wanting to check it out. That's been pretty good. I've also been playing more Guacamelee. I finished the first dungeon and got my chicken morph form, which has more combat abilities here in the sequel. The first game, you could just kind of peck as your main attack and run around. It wasn't too much good on the combat part of it. But now they've integrated a lot of the combat stuff that Juan has in his normal form into the chicken form. So you can do wall jumps. So far I have something that's not the uppercut, but it's kind of a diagonal attack, so it kind of works basically the same. But yeah, there are specific like color blocks that block off passages that you need to use that move on to get through them. But yeah, I'm enjoying that quite a bit, and the Rick and Morty stuff is definitely getting more elaborate. As so when I beat the first dungeon, I got the relic that was in there and took it back to the Council of Ue Chivos. And they're like, well, we need the Chuzo statue for the forward punch special attack, which is the blue blocks. And like, oh, those have all been destroyed in all of ours except for the universe with all the statues. So you have to go into his. He creates his own thing there. And you go break them all if you want, because he tells you, oh, these are all in mint condition, wrapped, never been opened sort of thing. And you can just go bust them all up if you want, which I did the first time. And I got, like, Fresh Breath was, like, one of them. And it's, like, all these stupid little things that aren't really upgrades. They're just supposed to be jokes that are pretty good. But I ended up just reverting the save and just going through and getting the one that I needed. I don't think there's any sort of story connotations to it. I just didn't feel like it. Yeah. I've been going through that some more. I think I'm headed towards the second dungeon. The first dungeon, like the main baddie, his like henchman that you're fighting there is a Mexican magician who sings a little bit, but also has like three chickens that are his like helpers, and they alert him to your presence earlier on in the dungeon. So they got some neat new sidekick people. But also been playing more Chasm, where I am leveling up a bird and a sword. So I got these helmets that I guess has these sort of familiars attached to them that'll fly around and attack people. So I've been leveling up a sword and a bird.
Okay.
Primarily, I got to a good spot where there are these two undead archers who, if you duck, they can hit you. If at least when you're on the same platform. So I just go duck and let the bird take his time and attack. Occasionally throwing an attack in there just to speed it along. Because all it just needs is the final attack for him to get the XP. And kind of using them a little bit in regular combat, which is nice because it gives a couple extra hits. They're not particularly fast in terms of when they do attacks. Though the sword will sometimes get into a state where it'll just kind of keep lining up attacks and sort of flying at the enemy. I'll just kind of keep doing it over and over and over again, but I think it takes a little bit for that to trigger. But otherwise, it's neat. I got a new ability, which is a parachute, which isn't the double jump I was wanting, but it helps me get along some longer gaps.
I was saying, does it help bail you out when you bankrupt a company?
No, that's the golden one.
Yeah. This one's just like a cloth parachute. Kind of like what Link has in Breath of the Wild.
I thought you said gold parachute.
No.
I didn't hear you say cloth.
No. But yeah, it's... So I went around and found a couple things that I could unlock with that new ability. But not a couple of them that I've been wanting. So I'm still waiting on this double jump. Still got three more upgrades to get. But otherwise, I'm moving along in that. And I think that's about it. How about you, Lee?
So I've been doing something a little bit different this week. So it started out with so I realized I'm playing a lot more on portable systems again. And because of that, I want to be able to actually get good sound out of some of the stuff that I'm playing. So I started testing. I've got a lot of headphones lying around the house and just trying to see which ones, you know, really worked for me and stuff like that. And I've got a couple of closed backs, like the ATM M50X, which is probably my favorite like casual headphone, but I don't really like it for gaming because I want the stuff that I play to have sort of a sound stage. So I started messing around and like I've got some absurdly expensive headphones, and those are obviously not going to be powered by a Wii U or not a Wii U, by a Switch or like a 3DS. And I've got a little portable amp, so I just started playing around with them. And I actually ended up Phil, you might appreciate this. I have a pair of Sennheiser, they're on Mass Drop. They're the 58X Jubilee, which was like kind of like the original one. The Jubilee was a prototype for the HD600. Right. And I've been using those with a little portable FiO amp, and I have been like stupidly impressed with them. Because like and the whole reason I started doing this is because I wanted to have good sound rather than just using some shitty earbuds, which I don't like earbuds in general. I like over the ear headphones. And I had like, you know, the HD 598s, and those drive pretty well, but they're a little light on the bass, and the pair that I had, like the headband got screwed up and it was starting to peel. So I was like, so started testing them out. I even went a little nuts and tried to plug in my HD 650s just to see what would happen. And you know, those are pretty power hungry, so didn't really produce the kind of sound that I wanted. So I'm using this little FiO amp for them and been pretty impressed. So because of that, so then I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to fire Xenogears back up because the music in Xenogears is so awesome anyway. And so I just started, you know, playing through that again. And I was actually playing that last night while my wife was playing WoW. I dislocated my knee, so I didn't want to walk back downstairs. So I was like, I'm just going to sit up here and play my Vita. So I've been going back through Xenogears, and it's so funny, like, Phil, you were talking about playing Super Metroid. Like, I never finished Xenogears. I got really frustrated with it, and I don't know if it was just because of where I was in my life, because I sort of was just had this attitude of, like, why don't they just get to the fucking point, you know? And so I, you know, wasn't in the right headspace, I think, for Xenogears. But, you know, I'm a little bit older now, and I was like, you know, this is one of those classics I never finished, so I'm going to try and finish it.
They did legit botch the ending to that game.
Oh yeah, no, I know. But I mean, there's still so many people that I know that I have a tremendous amount of respect for that are like, even as, you know, even with Xenogears flaws, it's a fantastic game. It's worth playing. And so I really kind of just fired it up to try and take it more on its own merit rather than what pissed me off about it before. So I've been going through that, and it's so funny because some of the stuff that is in that game now, I don't think I could tolerate from like a current generation game. Like the biggest one is the tech speed. You can't increase the tech speed. And I feel like that's probably where half the hours of that game actually come from. If I could read the text as fast as I normally do with other games where I'm constantly hitting the button because I can read fast enough, I could probably knock 20 hours off this game. So that was one of the things. And then just kind of like noticing how uneven the pacing is and everything. But then you get right back into combat and it's fun. But like last night I got stupidly frustrated because like I don't think you should have platforming in a game like this, you know? And it's so.
Oh God, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like I'm platforming with one of the mechs, and I'm trying to jump, but because the game is about to load a fucking battle, I don't jump. I just fall off the fucking cliff. And that must have happened last night with this platforming section like 8 goddamn times, to the part where I would walk my mech around in a circle right by the edge of the cliff until I got into a fight. Then I knew I could back up and make a jump, and I wouldn't just fall to my, you know, not to my death, but to the bottom of the thing again. And so, I don't know, man. It's just one of those things where you would think, like, if somebody was programming this now, they'd be like, this is a really shitty idea and we shouldn't do this. But then again, at the same time, it's also unique. I don't really remember much platforming in many traditional RPGs. And I still really like the battle system and the music's great. So so we'll see if I'm tired of it in another 10 hours or so. But I'm going to try and clamp down and finish it. So I've been doing that. I've been doing Battle for Azeroth just kind of slowly. I haven't really felt the need to like speed level in this one like I have with the other expansions. I'm not sure why. I'm really enjoying the questing. Like I said, the area that I'm in right now really reminds me of Crookback Bog from Witcher. And then somebody else told me that another section is basically what Pirates of the Caribbean Online would be if they ever made a game like that. So I'm interested to go to that area. And, you know, just playing that and enjoying that with my wife. And then I've been doing what I call the Switch eShop Shuffle, which is basically just me looking on the eShop trying to figure out, is there any indie game on here that's on PC that I want to buy because I'd much rather play it on the Switch. I haven't found, and it's pretty prevalent. There's a lot of stuff, but I haven't found anything that's really like kind of caught my eye yet. The one that I'm waiting on, and I'm actually pretty excited about, is The Messenger, which looks to be kind of like that Ninja Gaiden clone. I don't know if you guys have seen the ads for it, but it does a thing like where it basically switches between 8-bit and 16-bit graphics, and it looks like they sort of use that as a like a zone switch to deal with platforming, kind of like the way that you would switch to the dark world or the light world in A Link to the Past, except this one seems a lot more dynamic. So I'm looking forward to that. And I actually had and I'll put a link in it for the show notes, but I actually had I sent a set of Joy-Cons off to a guy on Etsy, a guy named Goose Electronics. And the reason I did that was because he will swap out the shell on your Joy-Con on your left one and put in a D-pad instead of the buttons. And so I've actually just been going back through and playing some of the games that I needed a D-pad for rather than the analog stick or the shitty four buttons that are on the bottom of the left Joy-Con on the Switch, and it's a fucking game changer. Like, Nintendo, we know Nintendo loves money, so I don't know why they haven't made an official Joy-Con, because I know Hori has one, but I don't know why Nintendo hasn't made an official Joy-Con that has a D-pad. And they
I want to say there's a third-party accessory maker that does that in Japan.
Yeah, Hori.
It's missing Hori. A bunch of stuff.
Yeah, Hori is.
And it drinks power.
Yeah, it drains power. I don't think it has rumble or anything else like this. All this guy is doing is switching out the case and then putting in a D-pad. And he's got, and the cool thing is he's got like the old translucent Nintendo 64 colors too. So you can switch those out. I just got white and I got it done with the Super Famicom colored buttons, and it's beautiful. I'll send you guys a picture, but the D-pad is a fucking game changer. And I think it's really going to cement where I play a lot of those old style, you know, old school style indie games that are like, you know, the 2-bit, the 8 and 16-bit 2D games. I think I'll stick to the Switch because now I have a proper D-pad. It's pretty amazing. And like I said, I'll send you guys a link. He has a thing where you can send in the Joy-Cons and he'll do the work for you, or you can buy a new set of Joy-Cons from him and then he'll modify them. The other cool thing too is that when you look at the in the settings for the Switch, you know how the Switch will detect what color your Joy-Cons are?
Yeah.
He's got these set so it will recognize what color yours are. So like when I have mine, the white ones plugged in, it shows on the Switch as white. I don't know how he does it. And he does the same thing for the translucent ones. I don't know how he got that to work, but it is super cool. So yeah, that's just been about it. And I'm doing a little Hearthstone here and there just because the new expansion, I can play a game for 10 minutes, but the new expansion has this it's based around mechs. And it has this mechanic called magnetism or some shit like that. I can't remember off the top of my head. Anyway, the cool thing is what happens is if you lay down a mech card on the board and then you lay another magnetic card to the left of it, it will actually make those two cards merge. So it's basically kind of like Devastator from the Transformers, and you can just keep like melding these mechs over and over to get a bigger and bigger, bigger minion. So it's definitely added some interesting stuff to the game. I've just been playing with that a little bit, like on my lunch break, because I can do a match in 10 or 15 minutes. But it's crazy to see the kind of combinations that people put together with that magnetic option, just because you're not really sure what'll happen. But I'm an 80s kid when it comes to that, because you just heard me talking about G.I. Joes, and so anything that I can combine shit together, like a Transformer, like Devastator, I will totally play. So that's been part of the reason I've been playing Hearthstone. But no, other than that, that's been it. It's really been testing out headphones and playing random shit. I'm going to probably play Guacamelee. I saw that Guacamelee 2 is coming out. I need to go back and actually finish Guacamelee 1. I'll get there eventually.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's get into it then. So this week was Gamescom, as we already mentioned.
Yep.
And Monday, as I suspected, NVIDIA made the announcement of their RTX series cards. Their presentation was like 20 minutes late, which posed some problems because the supplemental media, like the Newegg and Amazon listings and all that stuff, went live before the presentation did. So that was one thing they had going against them.
Oops.
So that was a problem. And then about 20 minutes later, Jensen Huang's leather jacket. Jensen was wearing it at the time. I'll point that out. Although since he's never like actually without it, it makes me wonder if that's not like an alien entity that's controlling him.
Yeah.
It's Venom the coat.
It makes me wonder. And he spent like 45 minutes basically trying to convince everybody how amazing ray tracing was. And then after that, he actually announced the cards, and we got the notice of the RTX 2070, 2080, and 2080 Ti. A whole lot of marketing going on here that we have to cut through. First of all, let's get to the pricing, because you can pay either...
That price tag was an interesting part of the aesthetic, I believe.
Yeah. Because you could pay either $500 or $600 for the RTX 2070. You can pay $700 or $800 for the RTX 2080. Mm-hmm. Or you could pay $1,000 or $1,200 for the RTX 2080 Ti. The reason I'm specifying two prices is because Jensen on stage quoted a lower price, but when they actually went up, it was a higher one. So... yeah.
They're going to be some sort of advertising snarl.
I'm more inclined to think it's more of an early adopter tax, to be honest.
Yeah, and not just that, NVIDIA is breaking what they normally do. Normally the Ti version comes out a year after the original cards are launched. Like, to me, this whole thing kind of like, it just reeks of them needing to bring something out and then pricing it accordingly to get kind of people to jump, because we know a lot of people had issues buying graphics cards this past gen just because of all the crypto miners. And then so here they come out with these crazy cards, you know, that and I think like with the higher end ones, they're totally based towards the enthusiast. And but I think these guys are out to fucking lunch. Like, I am typically the person that they would aim for. I'm not paying $1,200 for a graphics card. Like, are you fucking crazy? Like,
that's about what I paid for my whole rig when I built it about 4 years ago.
Right. Like, I just built my wife a computer for her birthday, and I won't say how much, but it was around that price of a graphics card that they're pushing. So no, paying $1,200 for a graphics card, I seriously don't know who this is aimed for. I know people that will buy this because that's their thing. They have enough disposable income that they're like, I'm going to buy the newest, hottest thing. But I think it's incredibly telling that they announced the Ti as like the super high end. And then they priced it the way that they did. They might as well have just called it another Titan X, because you know there's going to be in 6 or 8 months, there's going to be another revision of this that might be like the Ti2, which is how they normally do this. And it'll be better than anything that they put out now, and it'll be cheaper. Like, this totally feels to me, and Phil, I don't know if you agree or not, but it totally feels to me like NVIDIA blowing their load, because they're like, we have to put something out there. People are expecting something. And then we're gonna run this huge amount of pricing. The fact that the 70 series are typically between $300 and $400. That's what they've been historically. And then the fact that they're bringing them out at, what was it, $500 and $700 now?
Yeah, $500 and $600.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, I paid $600 for my 1080.
Yeah.
When it was top of the line. So now for me to get the top of the line, you want me to double that? Like, no, fuck you. I don't know what you're smoking.
Yeah, there's, you know, for me, I feel like the this launch, or rather, well, announcement, because the cars don't go on sale till the 20th of September. It's too early and also perfectly timed. Because the main feature, of course, is the ray tracing. And, you know, we want to shit on the pricing. Yeah, okay, it's super expensive. But you can't really deny the just amazing amount of tech that they're actually putting into this card. Granted, we're still at the point where we're getting real-time ray tracing, but around maybe 30 frames a second at 1080p. So I think it's a little too early for that at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, it's perfectly timed because they're coming out 6 to 8 months before AMD has anything that they can answer with.
And see, and I think that's the biggest reason that they did it. That's why I feel like they're sort of popping their load here, because AMD has come back, you know, and in a lot of ways. But I don't know. Like, I think the other reason too is that I feel like, and I could be horribly misinformed by this because I don't run anything in 4K. I still do 1440p, but I do know that even like the 1080 Ti's would struggle with a lot of games to hit 60 frames a second at 4K. Mm-hmm. So this feels like these are supposed to be like the 4K cards, like the true 4K cards rather than the 1080 Ti. And that's fine. But I also feel like they're charging way too much for it. And Phil, you're right. Ray tracing is awesome, but it's not $1,200 awesome. Especially when I don't think anybody's going to go back and do like ray tracing patches. And I think what we need to be cautious of. Do you guys remember last generation when for like a period of like 2 or 3 years everything had that wet effect?
Uh-huh.
Remember that? That's what I feel like this is going to be. Like, you know, the tech is cool, no doubt, but it definitely feels like this will just be the wet effect that we saw permeate last generation when developers figured out they could do it. And then it was like every character in every game was wet for like 3 years. Like, this is going to be the same thing. Like, everything is going to be super fucking reflective. It's going to be like, do you remember the metallic Mario or Dural from Virtua Fighter? Like, that's going to be a whole fucking game now because they can ray trace it. And like, oh, look, we look at all these multiple shiny things on an army guy's helmet. Like, well, army guy's helmets aren't supposed to be fucking shiny. Like, it's going to be like that kind of thing. And I think maybe in like 2 years, when you actually see developers, you know, working on that stuff from the ground up and going, here's some not just crazy displays that we can do, but subtle ways that we can make this work, then I think it'll actually be a pretty true fidelity jump. But I'm not paying $1,200 for that. And because I'm the type of guy where I'm like, I'm not going to buy the low-end card. That's the other thing. And I think, of course, this is all anecdotal, but I know there are a lot of people out there that are like me that want to get to the top end, but there's also a threshold. And I think that threshold is about $700 or no.
Yeah, I also – that threshold also, if you're noticing, the RTX branding stops at 2070. And that's interesting in itself because I think that's probably the lowest card where they could probably get a frame rate that would be playable. It's weird because these cards are not mass market cards. These are high-end.
Right.
These are the cards for the early adopters, the guys who have – the money and want the latest and greatest.
And want it right away.
But these aren't the cards that most people will buy. And it's telling to me that the GTX 2060, 2050 aren't going to be using the Turin architecture. It's going to be Volta. Which kind of obviates this whole ray tracing aspect because that line of card isn't going to have it. We're at the point where the NVIDIA shot their load and is actually leaving a little bit of a gap for AMD because they could come in on and have this kind of technology on the lower end cards, make it something that is accessible to the masses. And that's kind of what AMD's kind of MO is as of late, stuff that performs really well at a good price.
The thing that helps AMD is if you've bought a monitor recently, at least the reasonably priced ones, not the super expensive ones, you probably have FreeSync compatibility in that stuff, which is required for an AMD card.
Yeah.
Whereas the G-Sync for NVIDIA stuff requires like added hardware, so that stuff is at least like $400.
Yeah.
So it's like now my new monitor that I got has FreeSync in it, so I'm more likely to think about AMD next time.
Yeah.
And I'm the exact opposite. I have a G-Sync monitor, which makes me want to stay in the NVIDIA, pool, but not for $1,200.
No, I mean these prices will come down. RTX technology is going to get more accessible. It's just I think this is a weird spot where NVIDIA had the ability to release a line of cards. They didn't have to. The 10 series was still doing well. There's still plenty, and the prices have come down to the point where you can buy them again. It was just a matter of a good time to shit on AMD, basically.
Yeah.
So
are we basically waiting on third party cards to see if they are better priced?
There's a few being listed on Newegg, and they're pretty much all around that. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So it's basically just most likely if you don't have like a 1080 or 1070, jump on that.
Yeah.
Unless you have the money.
Yeah, unless you have the money.
I think at this point, unless you're obsessed with the idea of ray tracing, and that when these cards come out, and hopefully like you see the 10 series prices drop, that might be a good time to jump in. Like I'm thinking about it like maybe the beginning of next year. This would be a good way for me to get a 1080 Ti pretty cheap and then give my wife the 1080 and then my son can pass or they can pass my wife's 980 onto my son because he's still rolling like a 690. So and that'll keep everybody pretty competitive. But this is the first time I've seen a graphics card announcement that made me go, I might just still buy the last generation.
Yeah.
That's never fucking happened ever since I got my very first Voodoo 2. So. Yeah.
Yeah, seeing a $700 1080 Ti here from MSI on Amazon.
That's a bit high.
That's about $200 off what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I also know the other thing, too, that made me think, and this is just the weird part of my brain, but one of those things that made me think, too, is that I think that with the crypto miners, and again, this is like 100% like tinfoil hat shit, but I think, too, with like the crypto miners, having really inflated the price of all of these cards, I also think that this gave NVIDIA a chance to really go, well, we could produce something, even with the technology, we could still produce something and price it higher than we would normally be able to get away with in the market because the market has been so used to these inflated prices that have happened in the last year. And it really kind of, and again, complete tinfoil hat, but it reminded me of what we dealt with back I'm sure you guys remember this with Hurricane Katrina. Before Hurricane Katrina, around here, gas never topped like $1.60. And then when Hurricane Katrina happened, it shot up to $4 and $5. You know, everybody ran to the pumps and stuff. And since then in Georgia, it has never dropped below at least where I live, below $2.20. It typically hovers around $3.
Here's the thing. Back here in Macon, it did drop briefly down to like $1.50.
Yeah.
Right around, I think it was around 2010, 2011 for like right around the time the oil shocks happened and, you know, the price of oil in general kind of went down.
Well, and then I realized.
But now it's like $2.50 regularly. Yeah.
And I realize oil is a global commodity. Like, I get that. These aren't really, you know, the same comparison. But, like, when you looked at, like, the NAND shortage that we had last year, so RAM went through the fucking roof and everything else like that, it's hard for me not to be cynical and think that these companies are going to use that as an excuse to keep their prices elevated because they want to keep their shareholders happy. Mm-hmm. You know, even when we had those gas spikes and, you know, now today, like, right now I went and filled up my tank. It was $3.20 a gallon. Like, you still have places like Exxon and all these gas companies making money hand over fist because of that price, and it wouldn't surprise me. Again, I know they're two completely different things. I know there's somebody listening to the show right now like this asshole. But the point I'm trying to make is that it I don't believe that NVIDIA is so altruistic that they wouldn't look at the skyrocketing prices that happened last gen with all of their cards and not go, we can charge more this time because people still paid it then. The same way that the gas industry did it with gas after Hurricane Katrina. Like, well, people saw this high price. Now, if we just lower it a little bit, they'll still jump in the pool. Like, the low-end card, you know, the 70 series, costing what the typical high-end card cost last gen? Like, come on, man.
Yeah. It's a weird state of affairs, to put it bluntly. Like,
or/and maybe, to your point. They also may very well be, like you said, Phil, afraid of what AMD would come out with. And so they're trying to go back to the money thing. Maybe they're going, this is our opportunity to, you know, to bust our load and to get these cars out on the market at a high price until AMD comes, where we know we will have to lower them at some point. So let's get as much money up front as we can.
Yeah.
Either way, the premise is the same.
Isn't Intel getting into the graphics card game?
But not before 2020.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe they're trying to get in before whatever Intel might have.
Yeah.
They're probably not that worried.
Oh, I don't know. They got Raja Gadori over there. He was head of the Radeon Technologies group, so he knows his shit.
Okay.
After I talked all this shit, if CD Projekt Red comes out and it's like Cyberpunk 2077 ray tracing in your fucking eyeballs, I'll be like, well, all right, I guess I got to find $1,200.
Yeah, and you know, like, they are one of the developers who probably adopt this kind of technology because they love pushing hardware.
I know, and that's why when I saw the announcement, the prices, and I thought about it, like, it took about 3 seconds. There was just this delay, and then I was like,
oh shit,
fuck. Yeah,
yeah. In the meantime, if you want an opinion, Avram Pilch over at Tom's Hardware says you should just buy it because when you die and your life
off of a 1080.
When you die and your life flashes before your eyes, how much of it do you not want to be ray traced?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think that's how that works, Avram. No. So if you want to read the rantings of a madman, go ahead and read that article because it is amazing for all the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was definitely doing lines off of like a 1080 Ti.
He was I don't know, given some money by NVIDIA probably.
He was given cocaine by NVIDIA.
Yeah.
He was given something because he threw his own coworker under the bus. So that was great. Anyways, so let's get on to what we're calling today Release-a-Palooza, because there's a whole lot of stuff that's been dated. Life is Strange 2, we got details on that, and the release date is September 27th.
Yep.
Yeah, so this game stars Sean and Daniel Diaz, a Latino brothers who live in Seattle. You can watch the gameplay trailer they put out. You probably want to cut out at a certain point, just to keep spoilers to a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, something bad happens. Some powers, I guess, are revealed in them, and they end up trying to run for their life and go back to their family's hometown in Mexico, sort of taking a long road trip. And so you'll be going to different towns in each of the episodes while you're getting there. It seems like a neat thing.
Graphically, the graphics definitely look better.
Yeah, the gameplay demo shows it, like kind of a more open feeling to the way the levels are designed. Because before, if you played the first season, you know, you had when you go into like a different room, if the door wasn't already open, it would be loading into a separate area. Mm-hmm. And here, that's all kind of one area. You're just opening the door.
Yeah.
So it's the tech is much improved for this, which maybe explains why the whole season pass is $40 instead of the normal 25 that you expect from like a Telltale.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. But if they're improving the tech to that degree and it looks real nice and runs well, it might be worth it. But yeah, that is going to be out next month.
Mm-hmm.
First episode's out then.
Yep.
And I guess the season pass with it too.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, that's kind of thing Telltale and them have been doing lately. You can't buy the episodes separately. Like the new Walking Dead season is all just one purchase. Mm-hmm. At least right now. I imagine at some point once they have the other episodes out, you might be able to buy them separately.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I also saw people that were disappointed it wasn't girls again. Like somehow like because we had the Captain Spirit thing, which also features a boy.
Yeah.
It's like that shouldn't be too much of a surprise. But yeah, from what I've heard, that Captain Spirit demo, you see these two kids at the end of that.
Okay.
That's how it links it up.
Cool. Okay, so look forward to that in a few weeks. We also got a gameplay trailer for Devil May Cry 5 and the release date of March 8th, 2019.
Yep.
Coming out on, well, all the things, basically, except Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he beats up enemies with a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Picks it up and swings it around.
As you would.
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Which
and also no, no more. And of course, this is sort of an unfair FU to Ninja Theory because they're I actually like DMC Devil May Cry, but the old Dante's back.
Yeah. So that's a thing. Yeah, it does look pretty good. I mean, you know, it's going back to that style that some people really, really, really dug, but. I don't know. It's not one that I'm going to be picking up, I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is still pretty soon after the apocalypse happens on February 22nd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All of the things come out.
Yep.
So, March 22nd, we got Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. That's coming out.
Dude, from Software. I saw a trailer for that. Holy shit, that looks like... It looks sort of like Tenchu, which...
that's what he said.
Yeah,
He's basically said, if you distinctly got a feeling of Tenchu, that was intentional.
Yeah, and that's what I've wanted a new Tenchu game for so long, guys. Oh, my God. So I'm super hyped.
Yeah.
Because the last Tenchu game actually came out from Software, and it was garbage, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this definitely is not Dark Souls.
Nope.
From everything they've shown, there's no like RPG aspect to it, I don't think. Or at least not in the same way that Dark Souls has it.
Yeah. So
it's a bit more cool. Just action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is a bit of a change of pace for From Software, but...
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't... What was the ninja game they put out on Xbox 360?
Atogi?
No.
360.
The one that looked... bad, but was actually, at least GameSpot really liked it.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was the one that was kind of like a B game.
Mm. Oh. I have an idea. Was it Shinobi?
No.
Ninja Blade.
Ninja Blade. Okay, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So. All right. So we finally got a release date for Shenmue 3, August 27th, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
They're laying a really long runway for themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Almost a full year.
A full year. I think they could hit it at this point.
Yeah.
I think they're probably getting close to where they need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They put out a new trailer alongside this, and it looks pretty good.
Yep. It looks. I mean,
it's, I think I'm the only one on the show that doesn't give a shit about this.
Well, that sounds like a you problem.
It is, yeah. But it's just, I don't know. Like, I had enough looking for sailors. I'm good.
Well, they well, found the sailors.
I don't know if you know. You've heard that they're actually going back and sort of remastering the first two games, and apparently
they did. It's out.
Yeah, it's out now.
It came out this past week.
Yeah, and they didn't. They didn't change any of the controls or voice acting or
all anything right.
like that. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So you can get all of the hilarious voice acting from the Dreamcast versions. Yay.
I was really hoping they were going to fix it, too.
Yeah. So, anyways. Next year.
I'm one of those people who actually like the new script for the PSP version of Symphony of the Night.
Yeah. There is a... Well, it's not, like, all bad news, because you also have access to the Japanese VO. So,
mm-hmm.
you know... Yeah, I'll just go with that.
So. Yeah. So you can pretend you understand how they say "looking for sailors" in Japanese.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's see here. What do we got? PUBG is coming out of early access, starting the 4th of September, yep. And it still runs like garbage.
And it's still mostly just recycled assets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this edition will be the introduction on Xbox One of the Senok Mac. Map, which is the sort of battle or Fortnite style map, sort of a bit more compact island to work with. They're also introducing War Mode on Xbox One, which is sort of a deathmatch style version of Battle Royale. Sort of having a set static area that you're landing in, and as you die, you get respawned back in with the parachute and weapons. Okay. So you're kind of, I think it's more Battlefield like, where you have points. That you're trying to build up to a certain point to win the fight. So it'll be something like 50 on 50, I assume.
Yeah.
There'll be achievements, and I think they said progress will carry over. So if you've been playing it quite a bit, you might have some stuff to unlock right away. And it says here the introduction of in-game currency to purchase cosmetics and the event pass they're having for the new map. Which just works sort of like the battle pass for Fortnite.
Yeah, except the event pass doesn't actually let you keep all the stuff that you unlock, which is great. So
that's something I remember hearing like Dota 2 does, or unlock like voice clips and such you can use, but it's only for the special event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so you can pay for it, and then we'll take away the stuff that we give you. Yeah, that's great.
Pretty much.
They're also going to have special DLC. They're going to actually have a retail disc version this time around. Because before it was a cardboard box with the code in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had the Xbox hashtag 1.0 set of clothes. They got pictures on this article here. Everybody that already has the game will get the ability to grab them for free. Looks okay. And they also have a special... Xbox One controller coming out that looks not great.
No, but it does have like those paddles down at the bottom, which kind of cool.
Yeah, $70.
Hmm. It's half the price of an Elite. So, yeah.
Well, there's no paddles on this.
No,
they're just regular controllers.
Oh, $70. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, it just has the PUBG logo on the battery cover, and like some random stuff on the front of it.
Oh, okay. Never mind. No thanks. I don't want to spend $70 on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So what we got here? DayZ is coming to the Xbox One. It's going game preview first, August 29th.
It finally appears.
Yep.
It's got announced a long time ago.
Yeah. It's delayed many times.
Yeah. Announced for the Xbox One at E3
2015.
Mm. Finally resurfaces 3 years later. So it's out next week on Game Preview. I think they're still working on PS4 version, which they announced at Gamescom in 2014, so that's 4 years for that. But otherwise, this could be a pretty cool game to have on console. Because it is not a Battle Royale game. It is more of an open-world survival thing.
Yeah.
Based off the Arma tech, where there are kind of zombies around. You can team up with people that you come across, or you can screw each other over. And it sort of has permanence to it. So if you die, you die. You lose all your stuff.
Yeah.
And that kind of turns into a zombie that's exploring the wasteland.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I mean, I don't know how many people are still playing this game. That's what I'd like to know. I know it's doing pretty well on PC.
Yeah, I'd have to check that out.
Yeah.
I mean, Fortnite is eating its lunch, but apparently it's still making money, so.
Yeah, it's a very different kind of game, though, so. What else we have here? Hunt Showdown going to Xbox Game Preview at some point.
Yeah, that is a Battle Royale game, which is all about duos. It also has permanence, so if you build up your character and they die during a game, they're gone. So you're trying to sort of get further into these games, earn enough currency to hire new characters that are built up, which are more expensive. So there's kind of an interesting sort of twist to that, as well as the game itself is kind of all about maybe a little bit more Left 4 Dead-ish kind of thing, where there's ways of dealing with these enemies that are around the map. So there's kind of, you have an ultimate goal to find, like, the, I forget what it is, like some big baddie that's on the map and take him down and get his, whatever he drops. And that's sort of how you win, is to be the ones that do that. But along the way, you meet up, I think it's 10 groups of others. And yeah, it's pretty neat for what it is. This is the new Crytek game.
Yeah.
And it's been doing pretty well on Steam.
Mm.
But now it's going to be coming to at least Xbox One.
Yeah. Looks pretty cool. It's got an interesting enough concept.
Yeah.
I don't know that permadeath is a selling point for me at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's just, yeah.
It's very much for those sort of people that like the challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are a lot of them, so.
Yep.
Good luck. Next up, Halo Master Chief Collection going to Game Pass the 1st of September, along with the We Fucked Up update.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is going to be hitting. They also have some other Game Pass stuff to announce. They're going to have a mobile app. I guess you can sort of check out what's on there and queue up downloads for that stuff.
I don't know if the queuing actually works, at least at this point. I think they just have the listing of the stuff. I don't think you can actually tell.
Yeah, I think it's in beta right now.
Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, browsing the games in the Game Pass catalog, discover new titles and download them straight to your console. That's if you have the storage space for them. Nothing goes wrong in the download.
Mm.
Yeah,
I had to go through a bunch of that crap trying to get some stuff downloaded the other day.
Yeah,
I like when games show up and there's no title on there. So, like, wait, what is this trying to download? it's some mysterious update for a game, and it's like, I just cancel it, and then it shows up in the update screen. It's like, oh, that was for Conan Exiles.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me that, but whatever.
Yeah.
But also, they got some deals going on during Gamescom. I think it's still going until the 31st. You can get 1 month of Game Pass for $2 and receive a second month for free. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's
pretty decent price.
That's for people that don't have an active subscription right now.
Yeah.
So if you want to load up for at least like the next 2 months. And the other one is on Amazon for Amazon Prime members. They can get a 6 month subscription for $60, and they'll give you 3 months with that for free.
So 9 months for $60.
Yeah.
That ain't bad.
Yep.
Yeah, the Game Pass is something that actually is a kind of a brilliant idea. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit more about that in a bit, because they have an interesting implementation if it's going to actually happen. What else we got? Ubisoft is going to be giving Assassin's Creed a rest for this year, so Odyssey will not be coming out this year.
No, Odyssey is coming out.
Odyssey's coming out.
They're skipping next year, which I think they should absolutely do. I think it worked really well for Origins, and I think they needed to go back to doing, you know, one every 2 years, let the fatigue not set in. And then I think it's also really important, too, because I think I'm somebody that's been a huge fan of Assassin's Creed, and I think the big problem that they had with a lot of the games was that they shoved too much in. And yeah. by that, I mean, like, it was like, okay, so this is the new game that's out. What do we need to do with it? What do we need to have? What you know, all right, let's add this piece. And just made the game super bloated for no reason. And I think mm-hmm. this fixes that. So,
yeah, because there's a lot of people that are still playing Origins. And, like, I don't really need Odyssey right now.
Yeah.
Because they kept supporting it, putting out new mm-hmm. content as well as special events and all that sort of stuff. And, yeah, so they should definitely let it take a break, especially since Odyssey is not too dissimilar from what Origins was.
Yeah.
Well, Odyssey is taking more of an RPG approach, but, yeah, it's...
Yeah,
yeah, I kind of like this new direction of Assassin's Creed, to be honest.
Yeah.
Although I'll point out, if I have to, I hate the scenarios where you have to chase somebody down the streets.
Yeah.
That always just pissed me the fuck off.
You know, it's weird. Assassin's Creed 4, I think it was Black Flag, had a whole thing where after every mission you completed, you could rate it.
Yep.
I imagine a lot of people put, like, 1 star for the chase missions or the tailing missions.
Yeah, because they were so stupid because you knew you couldn't catch the guy until they wanted you to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That or the AI would break, like, run a weird way. That didn't make any sense, and then you got caught because they decided to take a weird direction or whatever it was.
Yeah, or some random pedestrian would be right in your way and it's like, screw you up. And or the collision detection for the walls decided to just stop working for that one moment where you actually needed it to.
Yeah.
That was great too. Anyways. Next year, we'll see how it goes. So Nintendo of Europe announced a whole crap ton of indies for the Switch.
Yep.
Out now is Bad North, which is sort of minimalist RTS. Not RTS, but more of just strategy.
Mm-hmm.
With a little bit of roguelike in it. There's Morphe's Law, which is that 4-on-4 Mexican-themed multiplayer shooter. Mm-hmm. Where, so if you shoot somebody in certain body parts, they would shrink or grow, depending on whether you're on your team or not. So you could have, like, dudes with bigger legs that would run faster, that sort of stuff. But from what I've heard, it's kind of broken. it runs poorly and all that, so... Yeah. Not really as done as they would have liked.
Hmm.
Also out now is Prison Architect, Nintendo Switch Edition.
Oh,
sort of brings that sort of tycoon Prison Architect thing into the Switch now.
Yep.
I think it's comes with the first two expansions included. That's also out on the other consoles. That's been out there for a while now.
Okay.
Coming out later this year, there's The Gardens Between. It's a puzzle game. That's out on September 20th. Windjammers is coming on October 23rd.
Yay,
they also announced a sequel, mm-hmm. Windjammers 2, coming out in 2019. I think right now it's just Switch and PC. And there's like a teaser for that. That is just all animation.
Yeah.
But looks pretty cool. Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom.
Yes.
Follow-up to the Wonder Boy games is coming out on November 6th. That's also out on PS4 and Xbox One at the same time.
Yeah.
This War of Mine is coming to the Switch in November.
Oh, great.
Yep.
You could be completely depressed.
If you want to be depressed for the holidays, this game is for you.
At least until Snowpunk. Frostpunk, which basically takes all of the despair of this War of Mine and then puts it into the slow, inevitable extinction of the human race.
And wraps it in a city-building game, so...
Yep.
Yeah.
There's Everspace, which is a roguelike space shooter. That's been out on Xbox One and PS4 for a while. That's coming out in December. Games that don't have a specific date or a month that are still coming out this year. Moonlighter, which is sort of the dungeon crawler about being a running a shop.
Mm-hmm.
That one's coming out by the end of 2018. There's Baba Is You. It's an abstract game. As I say here, leans more on the brain teaser side with its puzzles. It's coming to Switch in the fall. Those originally came out of Nordic Game Jam. Streets of Rogue is a retro brawler with roguelike elements. It's coming out later this year. It has 4-player co-op.
Hmm.
Let's see, early 2019, there's Night Call. It's a management game and visual novel mixed up. where you need to investigate murders to catch serial killers in Paris while making enough money on the side to pay for your bills. There's Children of Morta, which is an RPG dungeon crawler. It has like family lineage stuff. It's coming out later this year on PC, but on the Switch it's early 2019. Let's see, Slay the Spire is getting a port to the Switch early next year. It's a roguelike dungeon crawler with cards, turn-based battles with decks of cards.
Mm-hmm.
It's in early access on Steam. And last up is Terraria. It's coming out later in 2019.
Yeah. So Terraria will be on all of the things at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, lots of good stuff there for the Switch, anyway.
And we're going to get more.
If you like the, yeah, well, if you like, you know, if you like roguelikes, there's plenty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised how much mileage you can get out of a roguelike. It's just, yeah. I mean, there's a reason why there's so many of them now.
Yeah,
it's like Diablo. The numbers keep going up.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to keep them going.
Yeah. So Tuesday, we should point out, Nintendo is doing a Nintendo Showcase. We'll see more of those in a couple of days.
This will be Nintendo of America.
Yeah. I'm imagining a lot of the same titles will probably be there.
I imagine it'll probably be new ones.
Yeah, as well. So I look forward to that. Cool story here that just shows IO Interactive actually gets it. Hitman 2, if you own the first season of Hitman 1, all of the missions and stuff from the original are going to just carry over. They're just going to be free DLC for you.
Cool.
Yep. So you'll have all of that on one platform. So.
Yeah, this will be great. Sort of brings over all of these locations, Paris, Sapienza, Marrakesh, Bangkok, Colorado, and Hokkaido, and incorporates a lot of the new mechanics and features from Hitman 2. Which is their new progression system, foliage and crowds being new places to hide in, as well as improved fidelity, picture-in-picture mode, mirrors is a new like strategy thing you can use to your advantage, improved combat AI, and new items like the briefcase, dart gun, flash grenades, and others, as well as new difficulty levels.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if you do not have the first season, you should probably buy it. Otherwise, you'll have to pay separately for the Hitman Legacy Pack that includes all these
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. In other news, we got an informal announcement by Toshihiro Kondo about East 9.
Yes.
It's happening. I don't think that really should surprise anybody.
I mean, East 8 did really well. Actually, East 8 did really well. So.
Yeah. Even with the somewhat lackluster localization.
Well, the localization for some versions. The one we got for the PS4 wasn't bad.
Yeah, the one on the Switch was not finished.
Apparently. Yeah.
So that's a thing.
Wait, which one?
The Switch version of East 8.
Was it the one with the weird ass name?
Yeah, it's
Lacrimosa of Dana.
What was it finished about it?
There were actually like Japanese characters.
Spots in the dialogue boxes that had kanji in them.
Did they fix it?
Eventually.
Eventually.
It's like, how did you miss that? Anyway. So the Until Dawn devs have a new game coming out, and they're doing what looks like an anthology.
Yeah. It's a horror anthology.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's called the Dark Pictures Anthology.
So instead of just one long story, you'll have a handful of different stories.
Yep.
To terrify you.
Yeah. To terrify you and watch, you know, teenage high school girls get and college girls get murdered in horrible ways.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say this is kind of similar to the Dark Souls path where Namco Bandai has swooped in and pulled a developer out of the Sony grasp. Bandai Namco is publishing this. The first of these games is called The Man of Medan. It's coming out in 2019. I think I said they're expecting to get about 2 a year. And the trailer is up for that, which features a group of young adults who decide to go out on like a tourist thing out in the middle of the ocean to
strike one
scuba dive for treasures on World War II ships.
Strike two.
And guess what? There is shit going on down there.
Bad stuff happens.
Yeah, that's a lot of death flags.
Yeah. And yeah, so in the tradition of Until Dawn, they can all survive. They can all die, depending on how you do things. Hmm. But yeah, this is going to be pretty cool to see them be able to sort of expand on that stuff in some cool ways. Because they said they're going to tackle different styles of horror and the tropes that come with that stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, cool stuff. What else we got? Okay, this next thing is kind of interesting if it turns out to be true, because it's they're rumoring that Microsoft is going to do an Xbox All Access package, which is a subscription service, which includes the console, Xbox Live, and Game Pass for either $22 a month or $35 a month, depending on whether you want an S or an X.
Yeah.
Two-year commitment, obviously, because they have to make their cost somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, hardware as a service.
They tried this last gen. That was through, I think, Comcast?
Yeah.
That was it.
Everybody hates Comcast, so that didn't work too well.
Yeah, I don't see myself being ever interested in this, because I like just buying the hardware and making sure I have that.
Hmm.
And ensuring, like, 2 years of something I may or may not want.
And $35 is getting up into utility bill territory.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's $35, you know, but, you know, you've got to consider also, you know, that includes your subscriptions, your Xbox Live and your Game Pass as well.
Yep.
So, you know, it's not a horrible deal, and if it was available in Canada, I'd actually consider this.
Yeah.
Because it also includes full service. So, you know, if your Xbox One blows up, you know, they take care of it.
Yeah.
For that 2 years. So that's pretty cool. It's an interesting concept if they're going to, you know, if they're going to do it. I don't know what the reception will be like, but I'm open to it.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
It's worth trying.
Yeah. I'm not seeing, you know, Sony or Nintendo doing stuff like this. You know, Nintendo doesn't have to, and Sony, well, they're too arrogant to pull something like that off. You can't afford our console, well, too bad. You know, anyway.
Yeah, I'm looking at the prices here. For the S version, it would be $228 over that price of the console itself if you were to buy it for $300.
Yeah.
And that would cover, let's see, $120 for Live, and what is it, $240 for Game Pass?
Yeah. So
it's about half off the Game Pass.
It's not unreasonable. Yeah, it's not really unreasonable.
Yeah, but if you were the sort of person that just buys that stuff when it goes on sale, mm-hmm. that's where you can cut off corners as well as get the console itself for sale.
Yeah.
People that are deal seekers are just going to find better ways to spend their money.
Yeah. So.
This seems like good for the people that don't have that kind of money.
Yeah.
That would normally put it on like layaway or go through like rental stores.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd still do it. Anyways. What else we got here? Valve is announcing a new version of Steam Play, which will enable like pretty much all the Linux games.
Yeah.
Yeah, so not really a whole heck of a lot to say there.
Yeah, except, if you know, the Penguin just got fatter.
Yeah. Well, if you're a Linux gamer, this is good news, because you'll be able to have access to a lot of games you didn't before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How well they'll work is still remains to be seen, but...
Yeah, it's currently in beta right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As they're working on having people test out the games and letting them know about any issues. But otherwise, they basically did their own modified distribution of Wine, which they call Proton.
Yeah.
That includes compatibility with Windows games titles. It also uses, they have support for Vulkan games.
Mm-hmm.
And see, DirectX 11 and 12 implementations are also now based on Vulkan, so they've moved that over that way. There's full screen support hasn't been improved. Improved game controller support, and performance for multi-threaded games has also been improved compared to vanilla Wine. And they've also worked open source with this stuff, so a lot of it has been rolled into regular Wine. as the people that run that thing have seen fit to add that stuff in.
Cool stuff.
So maybe now Valve has a better opportunity to make the Steam console stuff work. Not actually play most of the games.
Yeah. Because that whole Steam Box initiative kind of like died on the vine. There really wasn't a whole heck of a lot there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. So.
Before we get to the next story, I'm going over this Tom's Hardware article, and people ruin their lives with this kind of mentality. This is surreal.
Yeah, I told you it was the rantings of a madman. I wasn't kidding. You know? Anyways.
Like, I'm here. Genuinely curious how natural selection hasn't picked this guy off yet.
It's me. Anyways. So good news for fans of BioWare who don't like what BioWare is doing currently. Former BioWare devs have announced their new game, Breach.
Yeah, so it's QC Games is the name of the company. It's made up entirely of former developers who worked for BioWare, specifically people who worked on The Old Republic and worked on Dragon Age, and also they worked on Shadow Realms, which unfortunately ended up canceled. Those of you who don't remember what Shadow Realms was, if you remember that brief period of time when BioWare was putting out those cryptic videos of where people suddenly seemed to be having superpowers, that was Shadow Realms. But basically, it's the Breach is supposed to be a cooperative action RPG, kind of like sort of similar to Warframe, kind of. Basically, the way they've got it is you're a group. You go in a group of I think about four people, it may be more at some point, who go into basically these dungeon areas where, for whatever reason, the mythological world and all the people from all the mythologies of the world, they've started bleeding over into our reality in basically what they call reality breaches. And so you and a team have to go in and clean up house. Now, what's neat is that, obviously, okay, so first neat thing is pretty much every character, any character that you play is pretty much customizable from top to bottom. Everything from, you know, appearance to even stuff like play style and move style and what type of stuff you want your character to do. Completely customizable. They all sort of fall into some general, very wide-ranging classes, but everything beyond that is completely up to the player. And the other neat thing is the fifth player element, which is called the Veil Demon. And basically, this is a entity that a fifth player can control that can actually possess any of the enemies in the game that you come across, make them playable and stronger. And you can use it to either fight the rest of the demons, or you can use it to fight the other players. The choice is yours. They're currently having people let you sign up for early access. I already did it, because I saw former BioWare devs and game, and I was like, sign me up.
Yep.
It's PC only right now, so I'm not at all sure if my computer will be able to handle it, but I'm sure as hell going to give it a try, so...
Yeah, so you have to keep us posted on that one.
All right.
Cool.
I wish they would release the Baldur's Gate games, the enhanced ones on the Switch. That is all.
Oh, the old ones? Yeah, that would be pretty good.
That'd be dope.
Interesting.
It'll probably happen sooner or later. Mm-hmm. Everything else is coming out on Switch. So, so we got some Amazon stories here. First up, Twitch Prime is getting rid of global ad-free viewing. So, yeah, that's a thing.
Yep, you have to subscribe to Twitch Turbo. And the whole way they're announcing this end date is kind of weird. So it's for Prime accounts who subscribe before September 14th for years on Amazon Prime. So if you don't, after that, let's see, Twitch Prime members with monthly subscriptions will continue to get ad-free viewing until October 15th. And if you already have an animal description, then it will continue until your end date on that, or your next renewal date. So yeah, it's a little bit weird, but also taking away this perk kind of sucks.
Yeah, especially since you know, the content creator does have the ability to just turn that off on their own stream.
Yeah.
So it's like it's basically just money grab from Amazon.
Yeah.
Because the you know, the content creators aren't going to see any of that ad revenue to begin with.
Yeah.
So
and a good argument to use ad block.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Lots of people are going to be using ad blocks now. I've actually seen a lot of Twitch streamers say, yeah, if you're subscribed to me, don't be afraid to use other ad blockers, and that's a bad look for Amazon.
Yeah, this is essentially their way of getting more ad revenue, because turning this off means more views for that stuff automatically. Yeah. And it's also kind of weird that Twitch Turbo is $9 a month. If you do the Twitch Prime membership, it's $11 a month, but doesn't include the perk.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't. This is weird because I think that Twitch Turbo thing is just something that they kind of forgot was there.
Yeah,
I would be very surprised if that stays around for much longer. Because yeah, most people that I know don't actually subscribe to Twitch Prime. They just link their Amazon Prime membership and they get all the stuff there.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's what
Twitch
I do too.
Streams I watch. I don't even know what the notification, like the icon you have next to your name for Turbo. Mm. I see the one for Prime all over the place.
Yeah. I've never seen the Turbo one before, so
I don't even know what it is. So I don't know what to look for.
Yeah. And they don't even show it to you when they mention it in the perks.
Yeah.
So, you know.
There's a second part of this announcement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you've been subscribed to Amazon Prime and you pre-ordered some games, you got a 20% off discount up front. That is ending. I believe it's already over.
Yeah, it ends the 28th.
Okay.
Yeah, Tuesday.
Yeah, so better get your pre-orders in.
I am
the ones that count, I guess.
I'm actually really frustrated about this. I would switch back and forth between Amazon and and Best Buy, and I knew that the minute Best Buy stopped their whole Gamers Club thing, that this was going to be the thing that's next. And so I want to offer a little perspective from where I'm coming from, because I'm a guy who doesn't have a lot of time, but I still buy games. Being able to get, particularly with Best Buy, being able to get 20% off of any game made me get a lot of games. And even though, like, even on, and it would make me more willing to buy a game on launch day, that I was kind of iffy about because I knew I could get a discount. Now, granted, it was only $12, but to me, that was enough to make a game not $60. It really made it $48. Or then if something went on sale for $40, I could get it for $32. That made me buy a lot more games. This is going to be the complete opposite. There's no reason for me with the backlog that I have now to really buy anything on launch day unless it's absolutely something that I want, like Dragon Quest, you know, 11 or Spider-Man. Like anything else coming out, anything that I would have been willing to take a chance on because I got a discount, I'm not going to do that anymore. And, you know, I've heard a lot of, and this is all, you know, speculation, but I heard a lot of this had to do with publishers and not wanting to have the price of their product, you know, sort of push down. And that's a big reason that they are like, because apparently Sony was part of that. Sony doesn't even have a bunch of their games on Amazon right now because of those discounts. So apparently that happened. Like, you can't get Spider-Man, you can't get Red Dead or anything on the PS4. You can't do it on Amazon. And so this is apparently supposedly to sort of appease them. And at least for me, it's going to have the exact opposite effect, because those games that I would have taken a chance on, I'm not going to anymore. Until they really hit like rock bottom. And again, it's all anecdotal, but I know quite a few people that are like me, where they'll take a chance on something because they're getting a discount. They're not going to pay full price for it. So I think what we're going to see here is people just, you guys remember, I haven't noticed it happening nearly as much now because of these gamers clubs and things like that. But do you guys remember that pretty much like clockwork, a month after a game got released, it dropped $20 and like a 1 week sale? It was like clockwork.
Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much stopped. And I think it stopped because of these discount programs. So I think we're just going to see the return of that where, you know, there's going to be a discount a month afterwards because, frankly put, there's still way too much shit coming out, you know?
Yeah.
And so you have to offer a consumer, especially someone like me, which I think a lot of people are like me, where they don't have a lot of time, but they're willing to buy these games and hope that they're good and things like that, even if it's just to throw them on the backlog. And I think you're going to see a lot less of that because you're not incentivizing the consumer to do so. And I've seen stupid-ass response from people that are like, well, now I'm just going to go full digital, which is stupid in and of itself because if you're going to take a chance on a game, it's better to take a chance on a game that's physical so you can at least sell it, trade it in later rather than just going, oh, well, they won't give me a discount? Then fuck it. I'm going to buy something I can't refund. Like, come on. Like, that's stupid.
You know? That's some logic.
I would actually say I'm more likely to go digital now. And I'm not saying that for games I don't know anything about. Mm. I'm saying for like a Destiny I go digital on because I know what that is. I'm most likely not going to be horribly disappointed on it. You know,
so you're basically not gonna take chances on games you're not sure about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That goes back to the whole problem though, which is I think that this ability to have a discount let people take chances on games that they might not have normally played. And I don't think you're gonna be seeing people do that anymore. And instead, I think we're gonna go back to the stuff where the $60 game a month out got dropped to $40 because it wasn't selling because people weren't trying to take a chance.
That definitely happens on like PSN, like God of War was in the current sale, it's $35, $36. 2 months after launch, or a few months after launch, and same thing happened with Detroit, and it's really nice to have those sort of opportunities for the people that are in like the second wave of buying the game, not those that buy it like within the couple weeks of launch, like those that waited past that to see if there's a little bit more of a discount for it, and that's where they can definitely get some more sales, especially like Microsoft and Sony are aggressive on that front in ways that doesn't typically happen on retail.
Yeah.
That was usually like Ubisoft would be the ones that on the PS2 generation where everything was $50. You could definitely wait like a few weeks and get the game for $35.
Yeah.
And that's where I ended up buying some of those games.
Mm-hmm.
I think I even got Final Fantasy 12 for $15 off. Few weeks after launch. Or no, it was around launch because they had the special edition for that. I was like, well, screw that. I'm going to go get this for $15 off the regular version.
Yeah, and I just think the biggest question for me is who is this serving? You know, that's why to me it always keeps coming back to the publishers. And again, you know, I haven't been able to confirm it, but when I see that Sony's not letting you pre-order a bunch of stuff because for stuff for their platform on Amazon, then that kind of really spells it out to me that this is a publisher thing.
I can finger EA on this too because I'm looking for NHL 19. Mm-hmm. And it's not happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suspect this is actually going to hurt the publishers as well, because I think launch sales numbers are just going to drop in general.
Yeah.
I don't think this does anybody any good, to be honest. Yeah,
it also sort of compounds with the way they're doing special editions now, where you typically have to spend like on the most expensive version to get that early access perk of getting it like 3 or 4 days ahead of time. And instead of just saying, hey, if you pre-order a game, you get it ahead of time as a reward for spending money on us at all.
Yeah.
Ubisoft does it, WB, Square, EA, Microsoft. I'm trying to think who else is doing it. I think those are most of the ones. Mm. And I was trying to pull up like a list of like, here's everything that's available to pre-order on PSN. And here's all the dates that are tied to that. And it's hard to keep track of all that stuff. Especially when you just look at the listings and trying to say, okay, wait, do I get this 3 days ahead? Okay, that is... Because some of them have different dates. Because it's like the special edition comes out early. It's like, okay, wait, that's the normal date or the early date?
Yeah.
And it's like, just give it to everybody. Reward everybody for buying your game ahead of time. Retail or digital. Because then you're getting people on board earlier.
Yeah. And not just that, I think the other thing that's really important here is that I think you had people that were willing to take a chance on titles because they could get a discount. And now I think you'll see a lot of people going, you know what, I'm just going to wait for the review.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then that's when you're going to see it, like, you know, the $20 off, you know, a month later or whatever.
Yeah.
And it really fucks them over with people like me who are both risk averse and don't give a fuck about reviews.
Yeah. So. That's the thing that indies are doing really well right now is a lot of
indies will be like 20% off if you pre-order. Yeah. It's like, you know what? Right. And the thing is psychologically, you know why this works. It's because it's a discount. Even if the discount is just $2, you'll see a lot of people that are willing to jump on it and go, hey,
okay, I'm getting something out of this by getting it early.
Yeah.
And not really being able to look at the reviews or anything else like that, and they're getting their money. Like, yeah. That's like when you look at like Steam especially, this is the one thing that consoles have fucked up so bad for the most part with going digital, with the occasion, you know, when they finally do those crazy sales, like what Chris got on Agents of Mayhem and stuff like that, is that, you know, the big thing that really fucked Microsoft when they launched the Xbox One is that, you know, remember there was all that talk from some Microsoft reps where they're like, we're just trying to create Steam on Xbox. And it was like, we don't trust you. Like, I remember at the time I was so incensed by it because it was like, wait a minute, you want to have Steam on Xbox? What's stopping you from doing that now?
Yeah.
It's you need to take away all of our ability to like resell things and do shit like that so you can finally lower prices? Like, no, dude, like, fuck you. That's not how this works.
Yeah, like the whole idea of trying to create this supposed like Steam-like marketplace but offering no details backing it up.
Yeah, exactly. This is just what we're going to do. Okay. All right. I see where you're going here.
Creating a lot of people that are like, oh, people complained, so they stopped doing reselling and that stuff. It's like, they never said anything about that in the first place.
Yeah.
You just took it to the – you did like a slippery slope thing to see where it's all going.
Yeah, and it's and that's a whole different thing to unpack. But it is one of those things that makes me think about this because there's obviously ample proof that people will jump in the pool if you offer them something to jump in that digital pool. And if you're not offering some sort of discount and – as sort of a token because they're giving up the ability to sell that game, to trade it in, to do whatever.
And that's your dysfunction.
And then when you look at this too, like, you know, I think the same applies to you want people to jump in on day one, then you need to give them a reason to. And for me, that was the discount. If you're going to take that away, there's nothing stopping me from waiting until the game drops to 40 or 30, like what Chris mentioned with God of War. Like, because at that point, if you're dropping the price – and it's something that I was on the fence on. Maybe it doesn't matter which version I get, if it's digital or physical. Because if you're still knocking half off, then that's obviously going to be enough for me to jump into that pool. But if you just expect me to give you the benefit of the doubt that you're going to produce a good product and everything else like that, unless you're some company that has just had a stellar record with me, I'm not jumping in on opening day at full price. This shit's not going to happen.
Yeah. And also, like, for an indie, when they're offering pre-order discounts, you know, that actually is more of a powerful signal than you would believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you say, even if it's $2, it's basically them saying, okay, we are willing to take less money to get you in the door.
Yeah.
It's like they're willing to sacrifice their own profits just to get the game into your hands. And, you know, that's a big deal for a lot of people. It's not all indie developers do it, but
it's a sign.
The ones that do tend to be successful.
It's a sign of good faith. And especially from an indie developer, they're going, look, you know, we're going to give you, we realize you don't know who we are. And we're going to give you a reason to jump in. And that's the funny part about it. That's the psychology of it, right? Because even if it is just $2, it indicates that they're willing to give something in return for your purchase. And I think
$2 from an indie developer means a lot more than $5 or $10 from an EA or an Ubisoft.
And not just that, like when you look at it in terms of like the overall scope of thing, that psychological token matters a lot, because I think it's really easy to get caught up in gaming and to really think that, you know, we know that there's hundreds of people behind some games. We know there's two people behind some other games. You know, there's 10, whatever the amount is. We know that there are people working on this, and we know for the most part, none of these people are out there trying to produce a bad product. But the fact of the matter is we've got, you know, 30 years of games where stuff has been 30 years of history in games where things have been put out that have been fucking bad, that have been cash grabs, even stuff that was put out, you know, not complete. Like you guys were just talking about the East translate or the East port for Switch. Like, and that's the kind of thing where it's like, okay, with the behavior that developers/publishers have really exhibited, I think especially over the last generation when you had shit like Project $10 and them saying that people that bought used games were thieves and all kinds of shit, you got to do something to meet people even part of the way, because you back then you demonized the people that you were asking $60 from. And I know for a person like me, I'm not ever really going to be in that good faith space again to go, hey, you know, all right, you guys are obviously putting this out and you know, you want to put out a good product. I don't believe that shit for the most part. I don't even believe that with Blizzard. with the way that they fucked up Warlords of Draenor. Like, and Blizzard used to be kind of like the go-to company for me, where I was like, I'll buy anything that they put out. Square was the same way too. And then they gave me Final Fantasy fucking 13. You know, like there's always something. So, you know, when you start to erode that goodwill, Capcom did the same thing. When you start to erode that goodwill, then you've got to be willing to give something back. And I felt like that was the big thing. And it was especially something that was really important for me for Switch game adoptions, because Nintendo games never go on sale.
Yeah. You know?
So that was something else where it was like, okay, I can get some Switch games and I can get them a little bit cheaper. And so conversely, I've got like 22 games on the Switch. If I wasn't getting a discount on them, I guarantee you that number would be 5.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing. So, yeah, you discount a little bit up front, but you're going to get a lot more from people like me on the back end. And if you just take that away, to me, it just feels like you're just being assholes at this point, because you want me to jump in and you want me to just think you're going to deliver something. And I don't have enough time. I don't have the time I did when I was a teenager where I could sit there and go, man, this game has 80 hours worth of gameplay. This is awesome. I'm going to play it twice. Like, I don't have that time anymore. So I do find myself, even though I don't put a lot of stock in reviews, I do find myself looking at reviews from people like Chris Kohler or Jeremy Parrish or Jason Schreier and some of those guys. And then, of course, obviously you guys from the site, and looking at that and going, okay, is this game going to waste my time? And I sort of kind of put some of that on the back burner because I could get a discount. If you're not going to give that to me, then I'm going to go right back into that mode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we'll leave that one there, because that's a discussion that could go on for 2 hours, basically.
Mm-hmm. And so another
thing. So move on to Amazon, also announcing they're doing a game based on the Grand Tour, which is going to coincide with Season 3 coming next year. If this sounds completely insane to you, it's because it is.
Yeah.
It's going to be episodic, so you're going to get one each week to coincide with the episode. My guess is you're probably going to be doing the same things that they do in the episodes. So, yeah, exotic locations, over-the-top challenges, and, yeah, a lot of trash-talking, maybe? I don't know. But this is fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
I don't even care if it's bad.
Forza 5 could have done this.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Forza 5 could have done this, but yeah, Amazon's doing it now with on PC with Grand Tour Season 3.
What studio is at the helm?
Yeah, it's Amazon's own game studios. I think it's IG.
Okay.
Iron Galaxy. So, yeah.
It might be a bit much for Iron Galaxy to chew, but...
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, they did hire some pretty remarkably experienced game talent, yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah, it seems like it's coming to Xbox One and PS4.
Oh, sweet.
Good.
Mm. Nice.
I also got quotes from each of the guys on the page.
Yeah. Which is pretty much what you'd expect.
Yeah, I live in the deep countryside, so frankly I'm impressed by anything that runs on electricity. But I have to admit, this game is particularly brilliant, especially the four-player split screen.
Yeah. Oh, the stupidity that will ensue.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so
this has
just a quick
multiplayer.
Oh, I probably will.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah. So let's move into Gamescom to wrap up the show with. First, quick note, Bloodstained, delayed to 2019, Vita version no more. So,
and the reasoning they used for the Vita thing is weird. They basically said because Sony's not keeping Vita PS Plus games going. That was one of the primary reasons.
The other reason they said is they're stopping physical production, so they wouldn't be able to get production slots for the physical version. So
that's
a thing.
Though we also announced a Vita game last week, Hardcore. They didn't seem to have any real concerns about that stuff.
Yeah, so
it's like,
I don't know.
It's weird.
2019, so
yeah.
unless this is actually saying that the Vita production is going to end early in the year and Bloodstained is going to come out late in the year, that's another way of reading it.
Or that Igarashi did not do his due diligence in securing a production slot ahead of time.
Yeah, which is also possible. Or they just frankly looked at the numbers and went, you know, we didn't get enough Vita subscribers to really warrant it. So that could be also as well.
Yeah. Now they have to deal with those people getting refunds.
Yeah, they're going to offer refunds or they're going to let them switch over to another platform. So I'd imagine if you got a Vita, you probably also got a PS4. So, you know, you probably get one of those. Or, hell, maybe you want the Switch version now. Who knows? Anyways. What else we got? Oh, yeah, this is exciting news. If you're a Switch owner, Grandia 1 and 2 are coming to the Switch.
Yes.
No date yet, but it's inbound.
It's 2019, I believe, over the winter. And Grandia 1 is an HD remaster, and it will be going to Steam as well to join Grandia 2 over there. So looking at it from a classical JRPG scope, the rich get richer with the Switch and the PC, just continuing to pile on these great classical JRPGs that you know, we're seeing quite a few now that aren't finding their way over to the PS4, which I would not have predicted early in this generation.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, I will probably pick these up because the port of Grandia 2 that came out last year was actually quite good.
Yes.
So, yeah, if it's anything like that, and if they use the proper localization for it, yeah, it's going to be good for Grandia 1.
Yeah, I also should point out that Noriyuki Iwadare posted on Facebook that he was back in the studio recording a game soundtrack. And while he didn't say anything particular, I asked if it had anything to do with the Grandia news that came out of Gamescom, and he just liked the comment. So, we'll make of that
perhaps
what you will.
Yeah, either that or Sylphid. Who knows?
Oh God!
So,
a new Sylphid would be glorious.
Yeah. So what else we got? And finally, our last story: a little bit of DLC news for Soul Calibur 6. First DLC character announced, and it's the Crazy Woman, Tira.
Yeah. The fact that she's a DLC character caused a little bit of indigestion as of the announcement, but Okubo has gone on record as saying that adapting Tira's playstyle to the new gameplay engine in particular required genuine additional development time to the point that as part of the original floor plan, she would have been left out anyway. So it was only the fan demand that got her in the game and the changes that were necessary to adapt her to the Soul Calibur 6 gameplay engine demanded that that she be a paid DLC, which I can kind of understand as having played Tira in past installments.
Yeah, she's just nuts.
Yeah.
Very she's from 3? Character.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I think she was one of my favorite characters in that one.
Yeah, I played a little bit of her in 3. I played a lot of her in 4. Definitely an unorthodox character, and I can kind of see where Okubo's coming from there. And then just this morning, we got a trailer for who I'm guessing is going to be the boss character, is Osvel, the quote-unquote leader of humanity. kind of strikes me as a Necrid-style character in the sense that he has access to all sorts of different weapons at any given time and just borrows from everybody's moveset.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of a stinger at the end of his trailer that shows his other, like what I'm guessing is his boss form. And yeah, I will be surprised if he is not the boss character after this trailer. So
yeah, so Soul Calibur 6 is shaping up. I mean, there's nothing.
It should
about
be pointed
it
out that Aswell is not DLC.
Yeah, he's
so,
just in there.
Tira's announcement does not mark the end of core roster characters.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, there's nothing in Soul Calibur 6 so far that looks exceptionally like outstanding or anything. I mean, DOA 6, I think, just kind of raised the bar for me as far as what to expect.
Yeah, DOA 6 at EVO was the game I kept coming back to. Playing Soul Calibur 6 alleviated a lot of my concerns about it, but not all of them. I feel like movement has gone back to where it was in 2 and 4 again, and that's a really good place, and that's what I wanted to see. Get rid of all that stupid double-tapping sidestep bullshit from 5.
Yeah.
Because that just is too awkward for the game speed of Soul Calibur. And I liked playing Grow because a lot of his moves have some built-in evasion to them. So even if characters that I've traditionally gone to don't make it through intact, I really didn't care for Siegfried in the Evo build. Grow is somebody that I might actually put some time into and see where it gets me. But at the very least, I can say that Soul Calibur 6 is going to be better than 5. I can say that with confidence.
Yeah. Okay. That's a loaded statement.
It's a low bar, but...
yeah.
You know, I just don't know that it's going to be as unencumbered by feature creep as, say, a 2 or even a 4.
Yeah. Because they did just announce that they're also going to be doing that custom characters, because that's a thing that has to apparently be in every...
That's going
to
be neither here nor there, though, because as far as competitive play goes, nobody's going to be doing that.
Yeah, well, that's...
You have no effective means to transport data anyway to tournament units.
Basically. Yeah. So... Still, that's just more of a fun feature. It's like all the custom characters will play like somebody else.
Yeah.
So it's not really that big of a deal. So yeah.
So I definitely recommend that Aswell trailer because, he is kind of a batshit psycho character.
Yeah.
And you always got to have one of those, even though we already have Voldo.
Yeah. Well, is Voldo psycho at this point anymore? I mean, he's been around so long, he's just kind of normal.
That's just Voldo, yeah.
Yeah.
Like he's that guy that shows up at a party where you're like, oh, no, don't mind him.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, he's the king of no pants. That's just what happens when he gets going.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think I'll be disappointed with Soul Calibur 6. I mean, it looks like Soul Calibur.
Yeah, picking it up. I'll be playing the shit out of it probably, at least until DOA 6 comes out.
Yeah, me too. And with that, I guess we'll
end the show today. Actually, one thing we should probably talk about while we were on the show, and there's not much to say about this, but there was a shooting at a Madden tournament in Florida. 4 people are dead. Yeah, 4 people are dead. Apparently, there is a video on there where you can see when the shooting started happening because it was on stream, and you could see the laser go across somebody's chest, and then you start hearing the gunshots. So this was in Jacksonville, Florida. I have some friends down there from the fighting game community, and I know a lot of people that play in the Madden community. So, you know, I hope everybody...
You got everyone accounted for, or...
So far, we're waiting on some people to check in, but this was at the GLHF Game Bar in Jacksonville, Florida, and apparently the guy came in and he shot some players, and then he turned the gun on himself. They're saying that the suspect is dead at the scene, and that SWAT teams are continuing to sweep the area. EA definitely commented on this, and this was apparently part of the Madden Championship Series.
What used to be the Madden Bowl?
Yeah, and there's Complexity Gaming said on Twitter that one of its members had been grazed by a bullet, but he is safe and away from the scene. So there's a lot of chatter on Twitter about this, but I just hope everybody out there is safe. Goddamn, man. You know, I've been helping throw tournaments for 20 years, and we never worry about somebody coming in and shooting up the place, even with this, you know, I've had one incident where somebody said they were going to bring a gun and come after me. And that was years ago, but it was always one of those things where it was like, this is always, you know, this is just somebody talking shit or whatever the case.
As far as fighting games go, I think the FGC got that all out of its system in the early 90s.
Yeah. But this is still just insane. And this is it's another shooting in Florida. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So also, let's talk Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope everybody that's down there, everybody else is safe and Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Take care of yourselves down there.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, I started in the show on that low note, but
it's news. I mean, we had to talk about it.
Yeah, I thought it'd be something that we should definitely talk about and bring up. This is
I just hope your people are safe, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had security guards at the last couple of final rounds, and I think this is I don't know, man. It's kind of one of those things that makes me wonder if, you know, this will just be, because you can't do metal detectors at tournaments.
Like,
so every fight stick that goes through would set it off.
I mean, that's the kind of thing. Like, how do you stop something like this from happening? You know, in a tournament location. Like, this is it looks like, based on what I'm seeing online, the place that this was at was actually looked like a pizza place. So, you know, you're not gonna put a metal detector in a pizza place. No. It was like a game bar. But like, this makes me think about it. Like, I have a really good friend of mine, runs a game bar out in California, and this is one of those things. Like, you know, this is his business too. You know, obviously he's not running the one in Florida, but this is one of those things where, like, I want to reach out to him and be like, Gabe, is this something you're worried about? Like, people coming and playing arcade games and drinking beer and then possibly getting shot? Like, holy shit. So yeah, it's damn. Yeah, I'm just sorry to hear something like this happen. This is bad.
Yeah. So, well, I guess we'll end on that low note for this week. If you're subscribed to the show, remember that you can do so on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast aggregators. You can also check us out at smashpad.com or facebook.com/smashpad. We're also there, too. So with that, I have been Filippo D'Anelfo for Patrick Mifflin, Chris Sologi, Brandon Perkins, and Lee Lamb. We'll see you next week.